is a very special edition of Live and Local here on KIOS FM. Live from the studios at 33rd and Bird, I'm your local host, Mike Hogan. And with me today, she is the superintendent of Omaha Public Schools. It's Dr. Cheryl Logan. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr.
Logan. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Just a fantastic announcement. The strategic plan has been released. And honestly, after seeing your presentation, I couldn't have been more excited about it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to tell you why. This plan has benchmarks. It has measurable metrics so we can keep score, we can measure an as-is, and we can track our way and make adjustments to the desired to-be. I think it's amazing. There are four, I call them legs of the table of success. And can you talk about those four pieces that make this possible?
Well, I think, Mike, I wish we had had you when we were thinking about what the kinds of metaphors that we should make for the plan, because I've never heard the four pillars or our strategic priorities really kind of speak to us as our core mission, which is academic preparation and academic excellence and preparing our students to meet those post-secondary expectations when they leave us after grade 12. But it also talks about us as a business, right? So we have the things that we need to do that all businesses need to do. All businesses have to take care of the people they serve and the people that serve the people that they serve, right? So how we think about our ethic of care for our students, obviously, that's a pretty straightforward. People think about you caring for your students, but how we care for our employees. We have the most fantastic employees anywhere. We serve our students with zeal, with joy, which is one of our core values. But for me, it was really about, in terms of employees, it's really about how we're going to retain our employees and then care for our employees as they age. So if we looked at think about strategic foresight and think about the fact that all of our employees are aging, that by 2030, more than a quarter of the people in the Omaha Metro will be over 65, myself included. And
But you won't look it.
Oh, well, hopefully I won't. But I'm okay if I do. But when you think about the things that we need to do to care for our older employees, people are working longer, people are likely work until they're 70, and some of the things that we need to do to maintain not just employment, but people operating at their peak of employment. And I think, you know, those are things that people don't necessarily think about a school district having to do, but we have to do that as a large business. Our business is education, our business is children, and the communities that we serve. And I think those are some of the things that I think really set us apart. Hopefully, we looked at a lot of data. And when I go back to the over 65, and I'll even start at 60, when we started to look at where we have our classified staff, which is our bus drivers, our nutrition service workers, and people that really, they help make us go every day, that we have lots of people that are in that age group. And so that was it's really important when we think about what our healthcare costs are, again, the business side of the organization, not as exciting and glamorous when people talk about schools, but really important if you're going to run a business well and how we take care of those folks and keep our healthcare costs down. It's pretty straightforward for us. And then when you think about growing your own and making sure that the people that work for us see themselves in the future. So if they want to continue doing whatever it is they're doing right now, then how do they grow in that role and how do we support them in their growth? And if they want to sit in the superintendent's chair, God help them and love them for that. But how we support their growth and development, give them some diverse experiences. We are the only really large urban district in this state. And so some of those experiences will have to be in another place, right? So how do we make sure they have opportunities to visit and even just, you know, kind of cross-pollinate with folks from other parts of the country? So how do we make sure that folks can keep up with the trends that are around the country and serve our children and our city really well?
Sure. It's one of the things that I like about this plan, mm-hmm. and there are many, while the metrics mm-hmm. are district-wide, mm-hmm. they actually apply to each and every individual school. Can you explain? It's a subtle difference, but it's so important as to how this is going to really work.
Thank you for saying that. And I really, you know, as I, you know, I'm a student, and a teacher first. And, you know, I looked at plans around the country and, you know, as we started thinking about this. But when you only have district goals, then there's one person really that's accountable, right? And that's the superintendent. And I think that in order for schools to have skin in the game, and they do, that having local accountability. So when you think about the word accountability, like it's local, it's shared, it's students, it's teachers, it's students doing their part, it's parents doing their part, it's teachers doing their part, as district offices supporting all of those people doing their part. And another thing you can do is when you have district measures is you can hide weaknesses by having, you know, some extraordinary growth in one sector, in one part of the city or in some schools, and then not be as laser focused on the schools that are not doing as well. And so it's a kind of a combination of both. How do we have reasonable, you know, we use SMART goals, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, you know, realistic and time bound. And, you know, that's something I learned about 25 years ago, haven't ever forgotten it. And
well, have those. It still applies.
It still applies. It applies right. to everything in your life when you think about any goal that you set. And so we, you know, have an opportunity for each school to have their opportunity to be a part. Now, do we want schools to exceed? Absolutely. But, you know, but we also want to have a standard that we feel that we can help some and you know, help all of our schools get to.
Sure. I mean, mm-hmm. at a granular level, there was a by 2025, mm-hmm. the I believe it's the reading level is supposed mm-hmm. to have increased by 4%. Mm-hmm. And that's across all the schools. So if you have one school that goes 15%, mm-hmm. you can go, great, congratulations, you've right. done great, you've exceeded your quota. That's right. fantastic. Uh-huh. But the school that's at 3%, they need help. And so then that's where the plan has fluidity, right? Where you can make some adjustments to help that school that's at 3% to ensure they hit that goal by 2025.
That is correct. And we know that we are in the middle of a reading adoption and all the things that go up into how we produce those goals. But one of the things, key things is that as we've adopted a set of values for the entire district is that, you know, when you adopt a set of values, you know, it's splashy and it's kind of cool, but people have to start living those values in order for you to see the results of the values. And so allowing ourselves some time to saturate the values and to take on those and to learn. And I think the one of the things that we're doing is every 18 months, we are going to make some adjustments. And, you know, that's not for us to say, well, we didn't hit them and we want to reverse them. But we do need to make sure that we allow for some flexibility in how we are supporting schools and then look at what the real barriers are as we move forward in why schools have barriers or hurdles, right? Or not barriers, hurdles, or catapults, right? So we may have some schools that really go far above, and that will also let us know that there's an adjustment that needs to be made.
Sure. Can you kind of take us through what were called data walks and how those had an impact on forming this plan for the next 5 years?
Well, I'll tell you, my team, I'm sure, loves me for these data walls, but we have three in our district. And if you think about an organization, again, a business, there's no business you would walk into and you wouldn't be able to see their data like everywhere, how they're doing and how they're measuring. And so that was an upgrade for us here. So we created one for elementary, one for middle, one for high. And we looked at every kind of data you can think of, even, you know, percentages of students that choose to go to their neighborhood schools, some things that you may not, because that helps you know about school quality, right? When
sure.
people want to go to their neighborhood school, that's a really important data bit as well as their reading score. I'm not saying that they're equal, but they're all very important in terms of painting a picture. And so we created one for elementary, middle, and high. For our high school, all of our high school principals came, all of our, and then they brought their teams back. The same with middle school principals. They had an opportunity to go. The Board of Education went. All of our district teams went. Our academic team goes often. And then for elementary, because we have 64, we brought a cross sector of elementary school principals to kind of look at some trends and to inform where we were thinking we needed to start. So, and then, you know, I attended all of these data walks. And at the end of each one, I threw out a lightning round question. And at the end of the elementary meeting, I said, you know, what percentage of your teachers are expert at early literacy? And so I'm not going to reveal what schools it was and or the exact numbers, but it showed to us, and they were being very honest, which I so appreciate, where we really have an opportunity for growth. These are some of our top performing leaders in schools that are across sector, some lower performing, with different kinds of opportunities in their schools in terms of socioeconomics and reading performance. And so we really got another good baseline, you know, just from talking to our school leaders to kind of paint a better, more of a picture using the quantitative data that we saw on the wall.
When you mentioned leadership in the presentation to the staff, mm-hmm. that was a few days ago, when you talk about leadership, you used the word honest 10 times on that. Talk about why.
Well, you know, in society in general, I think honesty is something we all yearn for in every part of our lives. And we have to be able to look at how we are doing and not be in the bubble, right? So we're in the bubble, right? We love kids. We love schools. We think we do a great job. We think we work hard. But sometimes there's a disconnect with how hard we're working and what our results are. And so we have to start with that honesty around that. We have to also, you know, talk about how our parents are experiencing our schools and be honest about that. We think we're nice to them. We think that it's welcoming. And sometimes we get feedback, you know, I especially, because people send me all kinds of nice notes about how it's really going. And I think honesty for me is how we should live, because we have to be honest with our young people about what the expected performance levels are. Because when we have students that present us with a lot of opportunities to help them get better, we will sometimes over-focus on growth. And really, the bar is achievement. And we have to be comfortable with knowing the bar is achievement, celebrate growth, and continually tell our students and support them in saying, yes, you have grown. This is the bar, right? So if you think about a pole vaulter, right? If they get better, it's interesting, but they're going to knock that bar down at some point. And I have no idea why I thought of a pole vaulter, but I did. And so that's something that we know that, is about honesty.
But it's also mm-hmm. okay mm-hmm. that they knock the bar down, because then they realize they have to work on technique. Right. They have to work on getting better, and right. then they can clear that bar. And that's then you have the growth.
Absolutely. And we know that our absolute best teachers do that every day, and our students are certainly looking for that.
You also talked about, now here we are, we're talking about a strategic plan. Mm-hmm. It's got metrics, it's got measurables, it's got this vision for what's going to happen in the mm-hmm. next 5 years. And I'd like you to tell us how important that it contains joy.
Well, you know, I laughed and said that's a value that I fought for, joy. But the kids, certainly, that was one of the three groups that contained our young people. All three of them, joy came out. So I think I'm aligned with some pretty significant and important partners.
Absolutely.
The joy does make us more productive. If things that you like doing and things that you enjoy doing are really important. And our internal messaging from the people that all of us who work here about how we are experiencing the Omaha Public Schools is the thing that leads to how people perceive us externally. So if we're joyful about our students, if we're joyful about our schools, about our work experiences, that resonates with people and is infectious. So if, you know, and it doesn't mean you're going to love, it's not a love fest. It's a difference between, I think, joy and a love fest. It's really about, are we working together towards a common mission and vision to do the most important work that is out there? And then how are we talking about our students and portraying them, their families, and the schools that we get to lead and work at? And then also, how do we promote them in the community? You know, 2 weeks ago, not quite, we had our student pilots from Burke. I mean, I don't know if you saw, I went back and somebody said, you have to go back and see your face when they were speaking. And I looked like I was like saying cheese the whole time for a photo. And because there's just so much joy in seeing their lives are going to lead to. They have a solid foundation. They got that foundation right here at the Omaha Public Schools. They learn to fly in a simulator that's located at Burke High School. They go to a local airport. You know, they have partners that are here locally, and it's a joyful experience to be a part of.
I couldn't even have predicted that when I was in public school, you know. In the section on financial accountability, and I would like to read a quote mm-hmm. from that, and the quote is, by June of 2021, audit existing systems and technology contracts to increase fiscal responsibility, eliminate redundancy in technology purchasing, and create a schedule for procurement of technology infrastructure, planned obsolescence, and security needs through 2030. Now, we talked at the beginning of this conversation about the business of educating. And to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is this where you're talking about leveraging the buying power of a district this size so that you can leverage those scales of economy for the benefit of the school district?
Absolutely. So one thing that we're not really proud of in public education, and I say that just generally because it doesn't matter where you go, are the number of things that we buy and sit on a shelf. Right? Mm-hmm. That's just a waste of money. And it's also about the things that we buy, and we don't ever use them. We don't look at the analytics. We just, you know, we go to something, it's bright and shiny, and, you know, people say, oh, you know, buy this, and the kids get on it 60 minutes a week, then their achievement will, you know, increase a certain amount. And a lot of those things are really evidence-based. But we haven't thought about, do we even have 60 minutes in our week? If we do have those 60 minutes in our week, do the kids get on them for 60 minutes a week? Kids who get on them for 60 minutes a week, is their achievement really, you know, showing? So it's those things all along the continuum that lead to the, you know, the kind of nuts and bolts of a business and why you are procuring, you know, items that you are. And then, you know, making sure that some of the existing contracts that we are using them to their max, and if we're not, how do we renegotiate? And in some cases, do we just say, oh, it's so nice doing business with you, and sure, we're going to move on?
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. With the way this particular plan is constructed, and I think it goes along with the strategic foresight, and I want to talk mm-hmm. about that in a moment, because that's a great methodology to use for this. But in the section that drills down on each priority, it actually shows what, how, and success, meaning each and every individual point, you've literally mapped out what it is, how you're going to get there, and how to measure success, right?
That's correct. And although I still think the public plan is still at about 15,000 feet, the tactical plans will be more like at 500 feet. And those, matter of fact, my colleagues, they're due to me today. And they had already started working on them, and they were pretty much close to being finished, so that we will share those with the board, and then we'll report out on those tactical plans, and like as I said, adjust them every 18 months as things get finished and we need to add other tactics to meet those, to meet our goals. So, you know, we wanted to write it in a way that was very easy for a person who's not in the business to read, and it was really important that folks could draw a through line from in between the strategic priority, a value, and the actual tactical thing that they will be doing to achieve those goals.
Can you now explain strategic foresight and how that methodology is a pretty interesting way to look at a strategic plan and a bit innovative?
Well, I will tell you that all good ideas have already been done, and you make sure that you learn how to borrow them. And we call that some people call it research and development, and some people call it rip off and disseminate. It depends on who you are. So I like to say that, you know, I had looked at the Chamber's plan here, and they used a futurist. I was already very interested in the futurist work, having looked at some of the work around the country that's in business around because really people, there's one futurist really in education, but mostly they work with businesses and some large government structures. and wanted to work and really thought, okay, well, it'd be great to have the futurists that work with the chamber because they already understand the Omaha landscape, which is, you know, which is a thing all to itself. So
and quite relevant to making the school fit into how this city is supposed to grow.
Absolutely. I mean, we are part of workforce development. I don't care what anybody says. We are part of workforce. Even if you're getting a liberal arts degree, you're part of or you're studying liberal arts. We're all part of making sure that the city can continue to grow and prosper. And so we decided to work with her. But we knew we needed somebody in the education realm. So we also tapped a person who has worked in the K-12 world and also very heavily in the digital world as well, because we always want, you know, we know that that's a big piece. And then we all know that we have a lot of financial opportunities. I love to call them that. And that was something that was important as well. So we also wanted to have an expert there. So we put together a team. They had never met each other, never. And so it was a little bumpy. I will tell you, it was a bumpy ride. We got to a wonderful place due to some great work and some navigation by two of our key employees, Jeremy Maskell in communications and Matt Ray, our chief of staff, who really helped keep me where I was supposed to be, and our partners. And so we worked with all three of them. They came in, they met with the board, they met with, matter of fact, our financialist had individual meetings with board members. He met with principals, something that people don't really think about, but he said that's important. That was the first group of people he wanted to meet with in terms of how they were experiencing, how we, our Office of Finance. And so, put those three things together. But the strategic foresight is really thinking about several years out where we need to be using science. These are all economists. They're all really smart people. Rebecca Ryan was ours. And she's, you know, we laugh because we're like, man, she raised our IQ points, like the average, like 10 points every time she walked in the room. And it was great. And so she has what they're called future labs. And she has a process where she brings together community members, or a lot of community members from all sectors of the city. And we did the futures labs and then kind of put together futures. Futures based on the trends that are being seen in, you know, science, technology, education, the environment, and politics. And how, I can remember that because there's an acronym, STEEP, that she uses. And use those trends to identify what our top trends are. Now, I had the last say on that, so I will tell you, I did have, there were like 35, and we kind of drilled down, and then she's, you know, we got to about 10. And, you know, that's what you use your person who's smarter than you for, to help you kind of cull through information and see what's valuable for your organization. And that's kind of how we got to those top trends. And so, again, through those top trends is really important. So if you look at the things that we focused on, we want to be able to see a through line to the, like in our high school work, does everything align with high skill, high wage, high demand? We know that over the next few months, we're going to be working to fine tune our high school programs, and we're going to sunset some. Some people are going to be sad, but hopefully the newer ones that emerge will align to what the needs of not just Omaha are, but also Nebraska more broadly, and then the United States.
Sure. Mm-hmm. This is ultimately not only to make the school district a success, but that success is measured by the success of the students, because this is for the students.
Absolutely.
Can you talk to me, what are H3 careers? How do they apply to our students?
So high skill, high wage, high demand. Those are the H3 careers. And so you want to be able to have a career, and I kind of jokingly say this all the time, where students can, at the end of, and most of our students will need some post-secondary, right? So there are a few careers that students can just leave right from us, and they can go into a high skill, high wage, high demand. But we want to align those with pathways that will lead to that. Some will take a 2-year, some will be in the military, some will be at a 4-year, and then maybe 8 or, 12 years if they, depending on what their ultimate career goals are in terms of their formal education. And then some can be apprenticeships where, kids can go straight from a construction trades academy in a school to an apprenticeship with a labor union, or apprenticeship with, in a company where they can do some work right away. And then they don't have to sleep on their mom's couch, right? Now, that mom may want to keep them at home, because I know that's how I feel, but that, they really are able to sustain a living wage and take care of themselves.
Sure, mm-hmm. absolutely. I had the benefit of going to a public school that I found out 5 years later was fourth in the country at that time.
Oh, wow.
It was that good a public school. And yet, I had never met the superintendent of schools in my district and everything. And what I was amazed about is how many kids know you and how many kids have met you before. And with that, I thought one of the show-stopping pieces of your presentation was the portrait of a graduate. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, a strategic plan, if you're going to do it the right way, and we try to do the textbook way, which is not really that easy, is really should be based on, this needs to be based on what do you ultimately want, right, to get. And so last April, Susan Christofferson, who's our director of secondary education, had already started working on the portrait of a grad. So it's funny because in June I went to her, I said, oh, we need to do this portrait of a grad. And she's like, oh, I've been working on that since April. Yes, because she knew this was coming, right? And that's why it's having great people on a team is so, so important. And higher ed, business people, educators, creating this portrait of a grad. They met several times. And really, it's about, you know, what are the skills and dispositions that folks need to have in order to be really successful when they leave us. It's also really super important to us as well that kids can say what they got when they left us, right? So if, you know, we had a young lady who spoke last week, you know, who could say, I'm bilingual in my calculus class, which is just like insane that a person is doing calculus in another language in public school. And so those two things together, like these are the skills and dispositions I should have. And I think another upgrade for us will be how kids identify that as they transition. And so we do a senior exit survey. So, you know, in research, we'll, you know, be getting this task soon to, okay, now that we have our survey, we've already have our survey. We did it last year. We started last year. How do we align the survey now with our portrait of a grad and the skills and dispositions that we expect our students to have? It's not really that big of a leap, but just want to make sure the questions, like we can at least have one question, because it's a pretty short, you know, these are seniors and they usually do it on their like last day or the last couple of days, and what good information they did give us some really great information last year. So, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Last thing I want to ask you about, what would you say to the parents, the taxpayers, the citizens of Omaha that are listening to this plan is going to be rolled out here over the course of the next several months in pieces and that type of thing. What would you say to welcome them to this vision?
I think that as corny as it sounds, this is a plan that we are living. One of the reasons that we wrote it ourselves, and we had people to help us, we wrote it ourselves, is because we need to own it. So if we have a consultant come in and write it, then it's their plan. And it was difficult because we had lots of folks who had not written one before in some senior positions, but it was a journey worth taking, and that these are the things that we are promising we're going to do. And we're going to report out on these things because these are the things that we really know and believe will continue to move our school district forward. And more importantly, will make us produce the kind of students that people expect for us to do. And to go back to honesty, which you talked about, you know, earlier, how we honestly talk about our progress and talk about our areas of opportunity when we're not able to move something as quickly as we can, and talk about why, not as an excuse, but to talk about why, and then the things that we're trying to do to mitigate those whys if we're running into some issues. But I think that those are the things that I hope people will see, all things in there that I think people can identify with and that makes sense. You know, I often say that one upgrade for educrats like myself is that, and I think I do a pretty decent job at it, but I'm sure I fall short at some point. I do make policy, but I have to make sense. And I've said this before. It has to be something that people go, oh, yeah, that completely makes sense. And I can relate to it. I have a touch point to it. And it's relevant to how I want my child to experience the Omaha Public Schools.
She is Dr. Cheryl Logan, and she has joined us to talk about the strategic plan that is being released over the next few months. Thank you, Dr. Logan, for joining us today.
You're welcome.